Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the ice bag of free speech because, you know, you exercise, you go to the gym, you come back, maybe you need the ice down. Maybe you need to break out the ice pack. Why? Because I just went to the gym. Mark Collett just went to the gym. You can go to the gym too. So go to Republic Broadcast. But before you do that, go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button. Send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302. Remember Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. Don't worry about the extension. Just don't worry about it. Operators will be standing by. Okay, we have Mark. So Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. Good to be here. And yes, get yourself to the gym. It's an important thing that all nationalists should do. All nationalist men should strive to be as physically and mentally ready as possible. And that's not Fed posty. It's just a fact. You know, I think that healthy mind, healthy body, it's very important.
And, you know, I'm a boomer, and it's not like I'm immune from aging. But I spend a lot of time in various gyms. I was in a weightlifting gym, but that's not my main thing. That's where I was an hour ago. But I've been spending a lot of time in basketball gyms. I've been in kind of a basketball, a couple of like basketball league type things and form leagues. And, I'm not any good at shooting or dribbling or even passing the ball. And I may be old, but I'm slow. But the thing is, I've got heart, and my heart's actually very good, and I managed to get up and down the court. And if you're not lazy and you push yourself up and down the court, you're going to be where the action is, and that's the thing. And then I sweat like crazy, and it's all good. So it's all a matter of just pushing yourself.
It is, and I've got to say this: I'm no spring chicken now. I'm 43, and I still go to the gym. Still try to hit the gym 3 times a week. Still run every week. I go swimming with my daughter, try to be as active as I can, go walking. And it's really important. And it's really important, I feel, because fundamentally, we are all getting older. And as you start to age, you can really fall to pieces. And I see people who are my age, but look, bloody 10 years older. And they're in a mess. They're in a bad state. They're in a bad way. And I feel like, oh, I wouldn't like to be like that. And I think people who, especially people who drink and smoke, you know, it really takes a toll on them. And I'm happy that I've dodged those two things and stayed healthy and tried to stay young. And part of it is for me. I'm not going to be one of these people who's like, as if I'm doing it just to inspire people. You know, hopefully it will inspire people. Part of it's for me. But since I've had my daughter, part of it is for her, because you don't want to be that embarrassing dad, do you? You don't want to be that fat slob dad that can barely move around. You want to be someone that your kids look up to, that your kids say, hey, you know, I remember my dad, he was always in great shape. He was always, you know, he was always able to run around and play, and we always went to the park. I think that's really, it's important to set the right, you know, tone in your family life, you know, with your children, with your loved ones, so that they all look at you in a positive light. And there are so many, you know, dads today that just aren't like that, you know, that are, you know, really out of shape, look really bad, you know, aren't the way you'd want a dad to be, aren't able to take part in things with their children. And I don't want that. You know, I'm quite honest about that. I do not want that for me or for my daughter. So I do think it's important. And I think we're also heading towards turbulent times, you know, and this isn't meant to sound like anything Fed posty, but you know, as turbulent times come up upon us, you want to be physically and mentally ready for that, and ready to, if necessary, protect your family and shelter them from an increasingly harsh and anti-white world.
You know, this isn't Fed posting, but I think of what's going on in Ukraine, and I see these videos of them grabbing men off the street and trying to shove them into vans to send them to the front lines. And they've got people my age. They've got people in their 60s.
They've got 17-year-old girls now, mate. I don't know if you've seen the latest footage, but they're lining up. You know, they've been doing it obviously with young girls, but apparently now it's girls as young as age of 17. They are now conscripting the meat grinder. You know, it's like, I suppose it's like making minced beef, isn't it? First the good stuff goes in, but when you run out of good stuff, when you run out of steak to go into the grinder, you end up with whatever's left, and whatever's left is about to be fed into that grinder.
Yeah, yeah. So like the average age of the troops is like 43 or so, and if they're sending teenagers, well, and the average is still 43, it means they're sending an awful lot of older men. It's completely insane. And yet, where's G7 conference? Let's support Ukraine because they're going to turn this thing around and they're going to win. And it's the best money we've ever spent because they're doing the fighting for us. Oh, well, they all died.
You know, I feel when I see things like this and when I hear things like this, I feel it's kind of a window, isn't it, into the minds of the people who are pulling our strings or pulling these strings. And I find this interesting because the way they talk about humans, the way they talk about the Ukrainian men and women, is kind of the way you would view or talk about your characters on a computer screen. So let's say, you know, we were playing Command and Conquer, and you know, the little troops are being churned out of the barracks, and every time you click on the barracks, another soldier, you know, is trained and deployed. You'd be looking at that and you'd be thinking, well, ultimately they're pixels on a computer screen, and you know, I'll keep marching them off, and if I, you know, it doesn't really matter, does it? And I suppose it doesn't matter because it is a game and it's just fantasy. But these are real people that we're talking about, real people who are going out onto a battlefield, dying, or you know, coming back absolutely mangled. But the powers that be are viewing those people as units in a real-time strategy. They don't really care. And they think, well, as long as we keep giving these Ukrainians, you know, guns and munitions, etc., they'll keep finding people somewhere, somehow, to feed into that meat grinder. And I look at that and I think to myself, what an awful way to view human beings. And whether you love or loathe Putin, at the moment, Putin is putting something on the table, a reasonable offer of peace, which could end this slaughter. Now, I believe the war has been going on for well over 800 days. And we were told at about 14 days in, I think it was 14 days, around 14 days, what's that, around 14 days, that fundamentally the war was going to be over within another 14 days. And I remember seeing repeated headlines, Russia were always about to run out of oil. And they were running out of oil within either 7, 10, 14, you know, 20 days, depending on what outlet you were perusing. They were always on the brink of running out of oil. And they haven't, you know, and well over 800 days later, they seem less likely to be dislodged. There's fewer Ukrainian able-bodied adults to fight the war. But the West is still desperate to send as many people as they can into that meat grinder. And at this point, you've got to be asking, why aren't the Ukrainians trying to dislodge Zelensky? This is something I don't understand. Yeah. And I don't understand it on two grounds. The first ground is they are being sent to slaughter. The second ground that I don't understand it on is not only they're being sent to slaughter, but at home in Ukraine, the things that are being pushed in terms of domestic policy are absolutely so toxic, so anti-white and anti-family. You have to ask yourself, what do normal Ukrainians think? You know, they're young men going off to fight and die against Russia, whilst at home, domestic policy is, well, we need more pride flags, we need more diversity, we need new hate speech laws. How can people still be supporting Zelensky in those circumstances?
I think Zelensky's popularity has declined considerably, although I'm surprised that it didn't decline faster sooner. About 2 years ago, when it became obvious that the military situation wasn't going well, and it's not as if Russia never had a setback or two, but pretty much, I mean, it's even with the relatively minor setbacks Russia had in Kharkov and Kherson, where they did orderly withdrawals, it's been obvious that they were going to achieve their military aims. Now, what was their military aims? That's been kind of a moving target, but that's another subject. For the past couple of years, I've been expecting, because the Ukrainians have been losing troops. If you measure the war in terms of body bags, the Ukrainians have been losing badly since the spring of 2022. They've been losing badly, and I was really expecting Zelensky to be overthrown by the generals. Now, I guess what, or by his own military, and maybe the reason it didn't happen is because the generals themselves were stained with the same blood. You had Zeluzhny, who apparently had a certain amount of charisma and a certain amount of popularity, but you know, he was pursuing the same war, and so if the generals themselves become so implicated in the slaughter, then they're not really in a position to overthrow Zelensky. And then, of course, Zelensky was kind of the money man. He was getting the money from the West, and the U.S. State Department in particular has some say in what goes on there. But of course, because Zelensky's term in office ended a few weeks ago, and he's now his role as president is constitutionally very questionable. He's more vulnerable than ever. But you know, the question is there anybody who is in a position to overthrow him and could garner any kind of popular support? I suppose there is. But I don't know how this is going to happen. And then you mentioned Vladimir Putin's offer, and I heard Alexander Mercuris saying that there's speculation that Putin, who met with his generals just a couple days ago or something, was told that the military victory is very near, and maybe he's putting forth an offer, which is a very fair offer, but an offer that he knows the West and Ukraine and the Western backers are never going to take. But he can be on record as having made an extremely fair offer. And then, of course, when the collapse happens, the military collapse happens, Russia's going to have an awful lot of territory on their hands. I don't know. I'm going to kick it back to you, Mark. What do you think of all that?
I think it's very, very interesting that they are repeatedly suspending any form of elections. And I think that's interesting because it tells you something about the popularity of Putin. And people will say, oh, no, they're at war. No one has elections during wars. What are you talking about, Mark? Well, yes and no. And I say yes and no because...
Yes, they do have elections. I mean... Clement Attlee was elected during, it was still the war in the Pacific. Abraham Lincoln was reelected in the middle of the Civil War in an election that he thought he was going to lose until like a couple of months before it happened.
Well, what I was going to say about this particular situation is that fundamentally, Ukraine is at war. But it's also kind of not a war. And that's a funny thing to say. so I'll qualify it. There is fighting in the Ukraine, and that is in the eastern parts of the Ukraine. It is in the Russian-held areas, and it is in the immediate vicinity, which is adjacent to the Russian-held areas. But I know people who, during the last, 800 and whatever days, have been to the Ukraine. I know people who have traveled to the Ukraine in recent times, and they have said that they have been to Kiev, and Kiev is not a war zone, that everything seems normal. When you're out and about in Kiev, it seems slightly quiet for a capital city, but it does not feel like a war zone. It doesn't feel like anything's happening there. People are still going shopping. There's people in the cafes. There's people in restaurants. This isn't like what the Western press is saying. This isn't a country under siege. So if you believed everything you heard in the Western press, you would think at the current time there would be, you would be walking through the streets of Kiev, and there'd be military patrols everywhere, and there'd be sandbags surrounding, restaurants and cafes, and shops would have been abandoned and taken over as military, HQs, and people would be handing weapons out, at the side of soup kitchens that were supplying beleaguered people with their daily rations. It isn't like that. That is not what Kiev is like. If you went to Kiev, you would be like, oh, what's meant to be happening here? And the answer would be, well, there's a war on, but it isn't affecting normal people. And this has caused quite a stink on social media. It's obviously not shown in the mainstream media, but there are still parties going on in Kiev. There are still terrace bars with beautiful Ukrainian women entertaining wealthy Western men, partying, drinking cocktails in, roof swimming pools, enjoying themselves. You still see in the Ukraine, people going about this quite lavish and decent lifestyle. And that doesn't smack of a country that's at war. And you can tell that there are obviously huge disparities across the country. But in what is the vast majority of the country, elections could still take place. I'm actually pretty positive that if an election was to be declared, and they said to Putin, could we have a ceasefire on, maybe 2 or 3 days surrounding these elections? I think he'd go for that. So I think elections aren't taking place because people know, or the West knows, NATO knows, they wouldn't get the result they wanted.
Yeah. So, and there are a lot of, I guess I'm glad that I haven't been making all that many predictions as often, because I've really been expecting Zelensky to be thrown out of office for the past couple of years. I haven't said it all that much, but I've just been waiting for the shoe to drop. And if I had been making predictions, I would have, it hasn't happened yet. I'm still expecting it to happen. But you have people who are gunning it for him. A lot of people from a lot of different angles. You got Petro Poroshenko, whom Zelensky defeated in the last presidential election over 5 years ago, with Zelensky running on a let's improve relations with Russia platform, and Poroshenko being the tough guy, the more or less war candidate, which is pretty odd. And maybe Poroshenko is trying to position himself as the person who the West can rely on to shore up the war. I don't know. You've got Klitschko, the mayor of Kiev. There's Vladimir and Vitali. I know they were both heavyweight boxing champions. I think it's Vitali who is the mayor. It's the older brother who's the mayor. And he's been criticizing Zelensky openly. You got Zeluzhny, the general that he fired or promoted. He promoted him to ambassador to London. Have you seen him? Have you seen him walking around England anywhere? I don't think he's gone.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilaji hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilaji Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilaji as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilaji by other names, Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilaji literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilaji has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Zelensky openly. You got Zaluzhny, the general that he fired and promoted. He promoted him to ambassador to London. Have you seen him? Have you seen him walking around England anywhere? I don't think he's gone.
I can tell you this, my friend. I do not spend much time wandering around London. I try to stay as far away from London as I can.
We'll have to ask Andy Hitchcock, I guess. Who else? Yulia Tymoshenko is making noise too. I guess she's trying to put herself forward as somebody who could negotiate an end to the war with Russia. Not that the Russians trust her or really anybody else trusts her, but you got a lot of maneuvering. And it might be that the generals themselves are too implicated in this. But yeah, at some level you'd think, okay, even if in the Kiev area and in the West, in Lvov, if you don't have, you might not have wars going on there, and with the exception of maybe some attacks on particular military targets, things are pretty quiet in much of the country. You would still have the men getting hauled off, being conscripted and sent into a meat grinder. So you would think that, I would think that even in Kiev and even in the West, that the whatever support there had been for the war would have evaporated with all of the men being taken away and put in a meat grinder. So it is, I don't have the answers to this. I am perpetually waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I think it could happen really at any time. And the, over the past, and I've been listening to Alexander Mercurius's, he does like a 1 hour a day, roundup of war news. And I listen to that pretty frequently. And it does seem, at least to the extent he's a reflection of what's really going on, it seems that the military situation for the Ukrainians is deteriorating. And it really seems like it could fall apart at any time, that the troops don't want to fight. They're being thrown into battle with hardly any training, that life expectancy is not long at the front, and that their morale is completely gone. So I don't know how long you can continue like that. The government keeps getting more and more money infused into it from the United States and Europe. But money is one thing, but if you don't have soldiers and you don't have weaponry and the soldiers to use them, then you're going to lose. So that, and it seems that that's where they are. So I'll kick it back to you, Mark.
Well, I think that's exactly where they are. I think they've been there for some time. You know, the reason there's a stalemate is because, for whatever reason, Russia have been extremely successful, I believe, in knocking out as many Ukrainian troops as possible. And you can keep pumping weaponry into the region. You can keep giving as many guns and artillery shells and other stuff as you like to the Ukrainians. But does it actually matter? Does it make a difference? Well, the answer is probably no. The answer is no, it no longer makes a difference, because there's no one to fire those shells. There's no one to use those guns. There's no one there to use the resources that are being gifted to the Ukraine. And that presents a really sort of interesting situation in terms of what can be done going forward. Now, I think what can be done going forward is very, very limited from the point of view of the Ukrainians. I don't think there's much they can do other than go for peace, which is what they should have done a lot earlier. They didn't. The only thing that can really keep this going is if they keep with the conscriptions, which I believe they're likely to do. But I think also, if the West started putting boots on the ground, and there has been, a lot of increased talk, both in Britain and Germany, of some form of conscription, and of war. That is something that has been, on the lips of almost every mainstream politician in the West. Why is that? Well, I think we both know why that is, and I think that's something that is very, very dangerous, because the French have already committed French Foreign Legion troops. Here in Britain, we've been talking about conscription, we've been talking about national service. There's been all these polls where people have been going to the streets and saying, hey, would you fight for Britain today? And obviously, as you can expect, the vast majority of young, non-Indigenous Brits were like, absolutely no, we would not fight for Britain. And that comes as no surprise to me anyway. But it is interesting from the point of view that they are considering that. And this is something I've got to ask you, really. It's one thing supplying the Ukraine. It's another thing sending actual, troops to the Ukraine, because that's a completely different thing. It goes from them being this giant proxy war to being an actual hot war. And that puts a lot more on at risk, doesn't it? It puts a lot more on the table in turn.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Get More Tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
It's another thing sending actual, you know, troops to the Ukraine, because that's a completely different thing. It goes from them being this giant proxy war to being an actual hot war. And that puts a lot more on at risk, doesn't it? It puts a lot more on the table in terms of, you know, what may happen to Western countries. It would allow Vladimir Putin potentially to use a much greater degree of force if he wished to. But the interesting thing is, how far do you think the West are willing to go? Because at one point it was going to be literally a matter of, we are going to give these people military and humanitarian aid to support them as much as we can. And it's gone from that to slowly morphing into more and more. And I noticed the other week there was actually a huge change in policy, where I think it was both Britain and America said to the Ukraine that they were finally going to authorize the use of Ukrainian weaponry against Russian targets on Russian soil, which is, again, another absolutely huge turn up for the books, isn't it? You know, because originally it was like, well, we'll give you what you what you require, but you must not under any circumstances use that outside of the Ukraine. So you could use it in what was, you know, claimed to be Ukrainian territory. So, you know, it could be used up to and including the Crimea. But it couldn't be used in actual Mother Russia. You know, the idea of the idea of a missile system being used to actually bombard Moscow was off limits. Right. But that's been dropped. And again, that's another massive provocation, because if some rogue Ukrainian unit decided tomorrow night that they were going to use some missile system to target, let's say, Moscow or St. Petersburg, that would really change things and escalate it in a major way. But then to add to that, you know, the thought of authorizing troops on the ground, well, that takes it to another level altogether, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. And, you know, one thing is that people might say, well, Russia has got troops in Ukraine. Russia is sending missiles all over Ukraine. So why shouldn't Ukraine send missiles into Russia? And, you know, you can make that point. But the thing is, because Russia and Ukraine are at war with each other. But technically, the United States isn't at war with Russia. And so, yeah, Ukraine's at war with Russia. You know, Ukraine, if they're at war with Russia, they can throw whatever they want in, you know, wherever they can reach. And actually, since the beginning of the war, they have been striking across the border, but not deep into Russia for the most part. You know, there was one kind of pathetic drone attack on the Kremlin a year or so ago, if you remember that. But the thing is, if the United States or Germany or England or Britain, United Kingdom, provides sophisticated weapons, you know, F-16s and longer range missiles that can strike to Moscow. Well, it's no longer a question of whether Ukraine's at war with Russia. It is Germany, UK, United States at war with Russia. And if we're at war with Russia and our weapons are striking deep into their territory, then why can't Russian weapons strike at our territory? That's what the question becomes. And, you know, that is a very serious one. There's one other point I want to make. And that's, you know, if you look at the map of Ukraine and if you're following the war by looking at the map, because earlier I said, you know, you can look at the scorecard of how many people are dying, and the Ukrainians are dying a much, much greater amount numbers than the Russian soldiers. But if you look at the map hasn't been changing that much. You know, you hear about Lysychansk or Bakhmut or these little towns that you never heard of before the war and you'll never hear of again. And, you know, they change hands slowly with, you know, a lot of fanfare. And they're not particularly huge places. And you look at the map and there are these four regions or provinces that Russia annexed a year and a half ago. And Russia's still not in control of even the entirety of those four provinces. And so you look at it and say, well, isn't this a stalemate? But the actual dynamic of the war is that, you know, this isn't hand-to-hand combat. The Ukrainians who are dying aren't seeing Russians shooting bullets at them. The Ukrainians who are dying are getting blown up by artillery, for the most part, artillery that is being shot from, you know, miles away. They're never seeing the people shooting them. This is done fairly remotely, artillery range for the most part, but it's fairly remotely. And the dynamic of the war is that there is a front line and the Russians are on the front line, which is, you know, largely in these four provinces that they've annexed. And the Ukrainians just keep sending men eastward towards that front line. They get blown up and Ukraine sends more men to that front line and then they get blown up. And so Russia doesn't have to be moving forward in order to be destroying the Ukrainian military. The Russians, I mean, they are moving forward to an extent, but that's not the main dynamic. The main dynamic is that the Ukrainians just keep sending men to the front. And because the Zelensky and his entourage, they're fixated on the map. And maybe they're fixated on the map because the New York Times is fixated on the map and because, you know, the United States Congress is fixated on the map. And they don't want, you know, Zelensky, when he addressed the joint session of Congress a year or so ago, made such a big deal about the fighting in Bakhmut. Rocks change hands several times a day and the blood flows through the streets. He was given this whole thing, you know, like as if it's all hand-to-hand combat. It makes a big deal to Zelensky to hold on to these little towns, which means he's just sending huge amounts of men to die defending towns that are ultimately undefensible. And the Ukrainians are not killing Russians at nearly the same rate. They'd be lucky if they're killing one Russian for every five Ukrainians that die. It's probably more in the range of a 1-to-10 ratio, which still means a lot of Russians are dying, but it's the Russian military is just much, much huger. The population is much, much huger, and it's completely sustainable for the Russians. It's not for the Ukrainians. So those are the things I wanted to say. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you were being a bit too kind to Zelensky, actually. I wasn't expecting you to be so kind to him.
Thank you.
You're saying towns, but I've seen these battle reports where people are literally getting excited over the capturing of a village, where you're actually looking at a village. So, you know, you're just like, oh, today the Ukrainians retook, you know, two hamlets and a village. And you're thinking to yourself, excuse me, two hamlets and a village. And, you know, if you look at the casualties, you've got these, you know, huge amounts of people dying over, like I said, a hamlet or a village. And you're thinking to yourself, well, this doesn't make any sense. You know, you're losing all of these people over a piece of ground that means nothing to anyone. You know, this doesn't mean anything. This is a disaster. You know, the people that you're losing here, this is not a good thing. But to them, it is a good thing. To them, it's something they can put in the Western press. And I think that's the one place you're actually wrong about. I don't think this is Zelensky looking at a map. I think this is really done for probably the British and American press, and so that they can say, mm-hmm. Oh, look, Russia have taken another critical blow for Russia. A village with a population of 600 people has been captured by the Ukraine. And what they're not giving you in that press report is the thousands of people and potentially millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment that have been used recapturing mm-hmm. that particular village, and why it's obviously completely unnecessary. But that's generally how this war has been unfolding. And I remember one time where I did actually challenge major ground. I remember you saying, well, I wouldn't be too sure of that. And as time has told, you were actually obviously completely correct. And in fact, what had obviously happened is Ukrainian forces had spent untold amounts of manpower and resources recapturing a series of villages that were of no importance to the war whatsoever. And that was really so they could put in the Western press, look, we're not losing. We're not losing, guys. It's all going to plan. You know, this village and two hamlets, they're back in the fold, you know, Ukraine marches on. But all of those things are really Pyrrhic victories. They're not victories that are going to win the actual war. They're victories for the sake of saying, hey, we actually got the win on this occasion. And that's not where you want to be. Because when you're making decisions, you know, on that basis of, well, we're doing this so that we can say that we've got a small victory in this part of the country, and we can pump this out to the Western press so that people don't complain too much. Because, you know, we've talked quite a bit about Ukrainians complaining to, you know, Zelensky or the Ukrainian government about, you know, the loss of life, you know, over there. But there is also the issue that people over here aren't happy about their money being spent there. There has become increasing amounts of anger about money being wasted. That just keeps happening. So I would say at one point in the UK, this war was actually quite popular. this war was a popular war. It was something that, you know, your average Daily Mail reader was like, yes, we must stand up to this monster Putin. This will be all over in a couple of weeks, but it's worth the bloody nose. You know, if we take a small bloody nose in the short term to stop this man and teach the world a lesson and bring democracy back to the Ukraine, it's all worth it. But 2 years, well, more than 2 years down the line, people don't perceive this war in that way anymore. They perceive this war in a completely different way. They are constantly saying in the Daily Mail comment sections, all this sort of, yay, we've got to go and do this and stick it to the man in Moscow, has been replaced by how much more money are we going to waste? You know, here in the UK, we're facing all of these economic challenges. You know, people are increasingly eating at food banks or eating with food that they've got from food banks. Yet, you know, we've got billions to give to the Ukraine and people are absolutely sick of it. You know, the days of people's flags on Facebook being little Ukrainian flags are long gone, and they're long gone for a very good reason, because fundamentally people are sick of it. So I do think that a lot of what we're talking about isn't just meant as a morale boost for generals and people in the Ukraine. I think it's meant for people in the West, because wherever you look, I think it is fair to say people are completely sick of this conflict.
Yeah. It's my understanding that in Germany, in the European elections a week or so ago, where the AfD made major gains, that those gains were, to a very large extent, due to their opposition to involvement in the Ukrainian war. I've heard that. In countries like the United Kingdom, they're giving, or France, they're providing a lot of money to the Ukraine, and to an extent that comes, you know, directly out of resources that could be put into other things like public health or education or other things. The United States, more so than other countries, has this magic ability to just create money, and it, so far over the past 80 years, it hasn't led to inflation as much as it would in a normal country. It has, but with all of the sanctions, in addition to this printing press buzzing sound going on, with all the sanctions, the result in the United States is very likely to be that the dollar will lose its status as a reserve currency. The dollar will be destroyed. I think the Western-dominated financial system is going to, if not be replaced, it is going to be subjected to a rivalry of all sorts of new institutions that are being created that are going to center around China and Russia, and the status of the United States and its ability to just print money and what I consider export the inflationary impact, inflationary pressure, that's going to be gone, and the United States will start having to live within its means, which it hasn't done during my lifetime. So it'll be a massive shock for everybody. I think this war, even though it seems like a relatively small war, I think it's going to be pretty much as impactful on the international system as World Wars One and Two and the end of the Cold War. That's my
thought. Interesting you say that, because I've got a video out this week, and that video is called Why Britain Should Not Have Gone to War with Germany. And it's a concise piece that explains why it was this huge Pyrrhic victory for Britain, and it basically destroyed Britain's position on the world stage. So entering World War II, Britain had the largest empire the world had ever known. It was top dog by some way. You know, obviously now the way the world history has been rewritten post that war, people think America was always top dog, but it wasn't. You know, Britain was, you know, the leading world superpower going into World War II, and it emerged from World War II ostensibly as the winner, but it was so heavily wounded that whilst it was outwardly celebrating some gigantic victory, the British Empire was dying, and it had been mortally wounded. And I think this may be similar to what we're seeing with America at the moment. So whereas the Second World War caused Britain to fall off its perch and America to rise as the new global leader, I think we could well be seeing something similar happening now, where this war, you know, in some ways, you know, you could say, you know, the Ukraine, it could be a miracle. Ukraine could still win this. But even if the Ukraine did pull off some unbelievable miracle, which is highly unlikely, I don't think for a minute that would be a solid victory for America. It would be a Pyrrhic victory. It'd be a victory that saw, you know, and it's highly unlikely that would happen. But if it did, it would still be a picture that it would still be a situation that led to, you know, America declining on the world stage, just as the British Empire.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Ease-Off.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Oh,
be a victory that saw, you know, and it's highly unlikely that would happen, but if it did, it would still be a picture that it would still be a situation that led to, you know, America declining on the world stage, just as the British Empire, you know, began to dissolve after World War II. And that's a very interesting situation to be in, that here are two wars that were completely avoidable. Britain did not have to go into World War II. They chose to go into World War II. They declared war on Germany. And that declaration of war destroyed the British Empire and reduced Britain to a vassal state of America. So, you know, we lost everything in that war, really, and for no gain. But this could do something similar for America. This could take America from being the de facto world superpower and ensure that at the end of this, America no longer holds that top spot. And in fact, you know, China or a coalition of China and Russia become the new world hegemony. And that's an interesting position to be in. And I think Biden is almost the perfect avatar for that change. Watching this senile old man bumbling around a stage, shaking hands with people that aren't there, not knowing which way to walk, having to be helped off the stage by people like Obama. It's embarrassing, but it is a very fitting avatar for America. And fundamentally, if we're looking at that and we're saying, what's next? Well, what's next for Biden? What's next for Biden is the old people's home. And, you know, what's next for America? Well, maybe the American empire is going to, you know, the old people's home of empires. That is pretty much where we're at. And again, this is something that didn't have to happen. Britain did not have to go to war with Germany. You know, America did not have to get involved with the Ukraine. It did not have to bait Russia into this conflict, but it did. It did. And fundamentally, it is paying for it. And I think the longer this goes on, the more it's going to pay. And as you said earlier, which is a very interesting thing, America has always managed to avoid the kind of hyperinflation and the kind of problems that other countries have faced when they've got into the kind of financial mess that America is in. But, and this is very interesting, you can't avoid these effects forever. You can't print money forever and it have no effect upon the economy. You can't keep borrowing like America is and saying, oh, we'll pay it back, we'll pay it back, we'll pay it back. And the debt clock just keeps ticking. Those things don't happen in that way forever. And they don't happen in that way forever because everything has its limit. And even for a country as powerful as America, there is a limit to what they can do. And I think we're reaching the end of that.
And you're absolutely right. So I advise everybody to go look at Mark Collett's video that you just described. Where would they find that?
BitChute, Odyssey, and Rumble. And I put a lot of effort into that. It does explain very concisely how Britain would have been better off not going into the war. And I think that people who watch that will find that extremely shareable to friends, relatives, and other people they're trying to red pill.
I keep comparing America to the Soviet Union in its final days, but I bet people could get a lot of insights from your comparison of Britain in the British Empire in what turned out to be its final days. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Mark.
It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Google Radio.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You can't handle the truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle